Welcome to this edition of What's Up Bainbridge, brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network. I'm your host, Bob Ross. Today we continue our several episode series dealing with the Bainbridge Island Metro Park and Recreation District. And I'm happy to welcome back Don Janna, the board chair of the Park Commissioners. And Don, you brought a special guest today. Please introduce.
Yes, thanks, Bob. Thanks for having us. Today, I brought Ken DeWitt with us, and he has been a park commissioner for 21 and a half years.
Ken, welcome.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you. Why do you want to be a commissioner for 21 and a half years?
This is, a labor of love, and it's been really great to see how the park district has evolved since I moved onto the island back in 1979. And I really want to see opportunities for younger people. I raised my children here on the island, and now they have young children. And I want to see opportunities for them. And I also want to preserve the natural character of the island. I live right next to the Grand Forest, and that's an important piece of the island to me.
I can understand that. And for a lot of other people as well, because we all spend a lot of time there. And the Grand Forest really has kind of a unique history. Tell us about that.
Well, it's one of the few pieces of property that's never been in private ownership since the days of long before Washington became a state. It was federal property, and when the state we got our charter, the federal government told the state that they had to set aside two sections in every township for school trusts. One was Section 35, and the other is Section 16. The Grand Forest is the remnants of Section 16 on Bainbridge Island. The Department of Natural Resources was responsible for managing that property for timber and for the school construction, state school construction fund. Back in the early 80s, the state said that the properties here on Bainbridge Island were really no longer commercially viable because of the encroaching populations around them. So they talked about their intention to surplus the properties. In 1985, they made that threat, or whatever you want to call it, a bit more formal. They had a meeting down in Port Orchard that a lot of people, including myself, attended. And that was the formation, or the beginnings of the formation, of the Committee to Save the DNR Forest, a group of basically neighbors around the island started getting together and figuring out what we were going to do. And then in 1989, when the state formally declared the property surplus, we kicked into high gear and started a campaign. And the end result was that the voters of Bainbridge Island passed a bond issue that had over 80% yes vote, which is the highest yes vote on any bond issue that's ever passed on Bainbridge, even higher than any of the school board bond or school bond issues. So, and from there, this has become one of our key nature parks.
Yeah, and it gets tremendous use.
Yes, it does.
And I mean, we were just in it a few days ago, and I'm always amazed. It doesn't matter what the weather is like. There's people out there really taking advantage of it. And then there are so many different kinds of trails as well.
I mean, yeah, we've got, there are three separate parcels that are not connected. Well, two of them are now. The Grand Forest West and the Grand Forest East are connected by the Hilltop property now.
Yeah.
But all three parcels are separate. The state, when they were managing that property, managed the parcels differently. The Grand Forest East was managed for power poles and telephone poles. And so up until about 20 years ago or so, when you walked in there, there was very little underbrush. And what you saw was a quote forest of telephone poles in a way. I don't want to talk about trees that way, but that's the way they were managed.
Yeah.
So they're all tall and very thin and together. The Grand Forest West was managed for regular timber. And the last several years, up until 1980, the only time that the Department of Natural Resources went in there was to log out salvage timber after a after a windstorm. So what was interesting about that was that it, when you walk through the Grand Forest West, you didn't see up until 1980 or so on, you didn't see any down timber in there that hadn't been down there for decades. Maybe a tree here or there, but any marketable timber was pulled out of there. And then the big windstorm that we had in December 1990 knocked a whole bunch of trees down in all over the island. And that's when the character of the Grand Forest, all three parcels began to change. And with more sunlight getting in there, we had more underbrush growing up and so on and so forth.
Well, just thinking about the acquisition of that hunk of land, forest, and all of a sudden it's on your plate. Your team has to decide how you're going to manage it. What were the mechanics of that?
Well, I went back and pulled out some old information that I had, old park board resolutions that were long before I was ever on the park board. The big thing was to preserve the property for public use. The park board did not say that they were going to limit it to any particular type of use. The intent was to keep it for more passive uses. And the grant that we got from the state of Washington allowed passive use, but the state let us determine what the definition of passive use was going to be. So essentially, that's an unrestricted piece of property legally. Now, it's different when you talk about what the practical things are. I'll go back a little bit. When the state put that property up for sale, there were two Japanese resort companies that were interested in buying that, very seriously interested in buying it. What they wanted to do was build a resort that was a tourist resort, which would be very exclusive. I don't know if it was going to have golf course on it or not, but it was going to be very exclusive, and it would have cut out the heart of the middle of the island for people that, well, just not, we wouldn't have had access to it.
Yeah.
Sam Clark Jr. was also looking at the property, I don't think quite as seriously, because his dad was the one that developed Meadowmere, and he was looking to possibly build a back nine. And, but again, that really wasn't as serious. I don't think he had the funding behind him. The school district was also interested in the property, and they had the first right of refusal on it. The school trust land, the local school district always has the first right of refusal. Well, there was a campaign on that, a lobbying campaign with them. The school district decided to buy 40 acres in what's now the adjacent to the Grand Forest East for possible future school property. Whether that ever gets built, who knows? Right now, there's trails all through it, and I think it would be an issue if they tried to do something with it. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, another part of the whole 1,500 acres of parks and trails and open spaces on the island are the historical sites. And I know you know about some of those historical sites.
Well, I'll start with the oldest ones that we've got, and that's Fort Ward. I mean, there were things at Fort Ward going back to the Spanish-American War, 1898. I don't know if any of those structures from back then still exist, but that's when Fort Ward was first established. And then in World War One, many of the structures that are down there were built, that facility went back and forth between the Army and the Navy, and I don't remember the exact history of it. But it stayed in government hands until the early 60s, when the federal government surplused it and the state park system took it over. The state park system had big plans for it. They wanted to build a park very similar to Fort Worden up in Port Townsend, have conference center there, and a big, I think it was 176 or 175 space campground. We have all the plans for that. It's just amazing. We're not going to do that, but I mean, at least as far as I know, but we do have the plans that the state handed us for that. But the state never really did anything with it. And several years ago, during economic turndown, the state decided they wanted to get rid of not only Fort Ward, but also Fay Bainbridge Park. And we worked the deal to pick up both of those. So now we have, just talking about Fort Ward, we have some real interesting historical sites there, which would be nice to get a little more information on. The one building that we have that is, it's not owned by us. It's owned by the sewer district, number 7, but we manage it, is the old bakery building. And the sewer district has their offices in there. And also it's a small community center meeting, area. It goes back to World War I. And you know, it was the neighbors down there started a campaign about 4 or 5 years ago to, renovate that hall, and the crews have done a wonderful job. I remember walking in there before any of the work had started, and it had had so many different remodels that were just slapped together and pulling it apart and trying to restore the building as much as we could to the original I might say grandeur or whatever. Took a lot of time, a lot of money, and it was a real work of love.
And it's beautiful. And if I am correct in this, Ken, it's one of only 3 remaining bakery buildings in the United States from that time.
Could be. Very well could be. Very well could be. And that building, it originally was a bakery, and it was used as the generator facility down there. So that's when the Navy really tore it up. Because they had their power generators down there for the fort. But if you and there are several other buildings there that are privately owned. If you go down onto the waterfront, there are some of the old batteries that are still there.
Yeah.
There's also the while it's not in the park itself, right nearby is the foundations for the old chain that used to be put across the Rich Passage every night that went over to Manchester State Park, if you can imagine. And I guess there was a similar one up by Port Townsend too. So every night the chain got yanked up so that enemy submarines couldn't get through.
Yeah, wow, that's an amazing story.
The subnet, yeah.
Wow.
One thing that crosses my mind when a park district takes on historical structures like this. Are there often, you know, fairly strong restrictions on what can be done and not done, or are there guidelines that you have to follow? And
the state was very, very lenient with us. I think that they wanted to get rid of the property and they wanted to have as few restrictions on it as possible. We do have some grant restrictions that tie to the property, but the historical designation doesn't really limit us like it does in some areas. For instance, restoring the bakery building, we didn't have to do it that way. We did it because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And the history buffs really look forward to it. Yeah, they are deep in it. It's great.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine, knowing how popular the historical oversight is here on Bainbridge Island, that when you do things or want to do things with historical structures like that, you get lots of highs.
Oh, yeah. Well, another one that it's really big and closer to where I live is Battle Point Park. That was, Before the Second World War, that was a bunch of farms in there.
Oh.
And Navy bought it in 1941, 1942 started, I think it was toward the end of 1942 they started developing it. That was the listening ear to the Pacific. What they did at Battle Point Park, there was an antenna that was over 800 feet tall, and at the time that it was built, was the tallest structure, I'm told anyway, the tallest structure west of the Mississippi River. And later on, there was a building in Los Angeles that was a bit taller, and I'm told that it was taller than the Smith Tower. And Smith Tower over in Seattle, the reason why that bulb's on the top of it, because they want to be the tallest shortly after they were built. But anyway, that antenna was over 800 feet high. It sat next to what is now the observatory, but at the time it was known as the Helix Building. It had a 1,300-mile-long coil of wire inside of it that was the magnet that amplified the signals coming in. The other major building there, the transmitter building, was where the staff worked to get the information send down to Fort Ward, because Fort Ward was where the decoding was done.
Oh.
So they received everything at Battle Point and decoded down at Fort Ward. Interesting thing about that is that what I don't remember whether it was the Japanese war code or the Japanese diplomatic code, one of the two was broken here on the island. It was received at Battle Point, and it was broken down at Fort Ward. So it has a very prominent part of the history of World War II. What's nice about it today is that we've been able to beat those swords into plowshares. the transmitter building, when I first came on the board, was an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. We didn't, the Park District had it, but we had no money to do anything with it. We had no money to do anything with what's now the observatory. It had World War II era tan paint literally peeling off the sides of it. If you walk down into the basement of the transmitter building, from this time of year on, there was always water standing down there. Several years ago, we had a group of people that wanted to start doing a renovation, and we figured, well, what could we do with the building? And we needed a gym facility, at least for the younger kids. The ceiling's too short to put in the vaults and so on for the older kids, but it's a great facility for the younger kids.
Oh, wow.
So that's what that's how the transmitter building became the mini gym.
Oh.
And then back in the early 1990s, the Astronomical Association was formed, and they came to the Park District, again, long before I was on the board, and wanted to put an observatory there. And Park Board said, sure. So cleaned out all the old storage that was in there, and the Astronomical Society got to work. Ed Ritchie, who was a prominent architect on the island, who actually designed put together the original master plan for Battle Point Park, was amateur astronomer himself, and he managed to get a big lens from the Boeing company. The lens had been miscast, and so it was set aside. And I forget what telescope that they were working on. But anyway, it was just sitting there, and he managed to get him to donate it, and he figured out how to regrind it to make it work.
That's amazing.
This island is insane.
Yeah. What a story.
Yeah.
What about the name Battle Point Park? What's the genesis of that?
I don't have all the details, but from what I understand, there were two different Indian tribes that were fighting over territory. The Squamish was one, and then there was one further south. And there was a there was a fight down at Battle Point, at the big point in the Sound west of the park. So that's the story I've heard.
Ah, okay.
We can do a podcast on some of the Native American names around the island, and that would be a fascinating one to do as well. Yeah,
I agree. That would really be fun to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Ken, I've enjoyed listening to you. You've got a lot of information to share.
And we haven't even started talking about Port Blakely yet.
I wonder if we should do a separate podcast on that.
I think we should.
Yeah.
He's a font of information. Unbelievable.
Would you be willing to come and do another one?
Certainly.
Just on that one?
Yeah.
That would be fabulous. Yeah, I'd like that very much. We'll get that scheduled.
Okay.
Well, Ken DeWitt, one of the Parks Commissioners, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Well, it's an honor for us to have you. And Don, it's always an honor to have you. And thank you for bringing such enlightenment to the table.
Well, we have a font of amazing people on this island. And the history is so fascinating to me. I mean, Ken, I could sit here and listen to you talk about this stuff for hours and hours. So I'm glad you're going to get to do another one. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Well, thank you both. And thank you for joining us today on this edition of What's Up Bainbridge, brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network.